Okay. Hello and welcome to another episode of Does This Make Me a Bad Person? A deep dive into the world of horror, true crime, paranormal, cryptids, and all other miscellaneous weird shit. I'm Rachel.
I'm Michaela.
So, welcome to this week's episode.
It is going to be so excite.
So excite.
As we mentioned last week, we took the liberty of thinking of a couple horror movie franchises and wanted to rank them.
Yep.
And
I love ranking.
Same. Did we rank any of the same ones or did we do all different ones?
We both ranked our own and then we ranked one that's the same.
What did we rank that was the same? Did I do it?
The Insidious movies.
Okay, I did Insidious and then I did the Saw franchise. That was it.
Yes, and I did Insidious and Nightmare on Elm Street.
I watched Nightmare on Elm Street with Taylor a week ago maybe.
Was it magical?
Yeah, I guess so he and David were here and David had, I think, never seen it.
What?
And so we were introducing him to a world of wonder.
Wow.
Yeah, he is welcome. So, would you like to do your solo or the together one first?
Why don't we do our together one first?
Okay, what did you rank number one?
You're going to just go number one to number four?
What were you going to do?
Start with the worst and go to the best.
Okay, okay, that's fair. So
there's a sense of mystery and anticipation.
Right, we got to create the energy for the room.
So do you want to go one by one or do you want to do a full list and then I'll do my full list or?
Let's go one by one.
Okay, what did you have for the fourth place?
The third movie.
I did as well. Insidious Chapter 3.
Literally, that movie got ranked fourth because, sorry. I don't even remember what happened in it. All I remember was being bored. I have no sense of what, like, I know it was technically, I think, the prequel.
Yeah.
But literally could not remember what that movie was about.
Yeah, I was incredibly bored through it. And I feel like it was nothing new compared to what had been done before.
Yeah, it did nothing for me. Mm-hmm. What was your third place?
Insidious Chapter 2.
Same. I said it was okay, but just a continuation.
I don't know if it was just me, but I tried to watch this movie four times before I actually sat down and watched the full thing. Like, it just didn't hold my attention, the first part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I sat down and watched it in its entirety with you my first time, but I agree.
It's okay. Like, it's good. It's still an enjoyable movie.
It's a movie that you would play on your phone the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is hard because I feel like some parts they want you to pay close attention to what's going on.
Yes.
So agreed. I was like playing on my phone, distracted for a bit, and then stuff towards the end didn't make sense because I had not been paying attention.
But whose fault is that, really?
The movies. It should have been more interesting.
Exactly. All right, second place. We have the same one for this, I bet.
Insidious 4, The Last Key.
Yep. I liked the plot. It was kind of sad with the whole dog and everything.
Yeah.
But I thought that they ended it on a strong note.
Everyone hated on this movie except us.
I don't know why, though. But also, you have to imagine that the same people who hated on this movie raved about The Witch. So they That's have true. No validity.
Yeah. I liked Insidious 4 a lot. I felt like it was actually scary. It had some good twists. And then they put some true crime stuff in, too, which I thought was super cool.
Yeah, I liked it. It hit a lot of notes for me.
You didn't really know quite where it was coming from.
Agreed. And then number one, obviously, we Insidious. Chose Insidious, the first chapter.
Yeah.
I gotta say, the puppet shop and the music in that movie were probably what did it so strong for me. Like, literally, Rachel hates this song, but the tiptoe through the tulip. Oh, my God.
I hate it.
I love it. Sometimes when we live together, I would just play it randomly.
Yeah. The scene in Insidious where that little boy just pops out, made me nauseated the first time I watched it. It scared me so much.
Yeah, it's a good movie franchise, though.
Yeah, the first one's great. I would say even the one I ranked 4, I still, like, enjoyed it.
I genuinely don't remember the third one.
I think a lot of franchises, some of them have, like, a real stinker. Like, the one I'll be talking about. But I feel like all the Insidious movies have been pretty good. Yeah. And I think it's most likely because Lee Whannell is involved and he can do no wrong.
He is so hot.
Yeah, he is pretty foxy.
Honestly, he's the reason that Insidious and the Conjuring franchise was so good.
And Saw.
Yeah. That's not wrong.
Did you watch The Invisible Man?
I have not.
Oh my god, you have to. It is so good.
Is it?
It's amazing.
I'm going to be honest, right now, my mom is on like a Hallmark Christmas movie kick, and mm-hmm. she keeps telling me movies to watch, and you know, I get like one day off a week, and so I've been watching Christmas movies all day. Mm. I definitely watched one called, was it Love in the Wild or Christmas in the Wild or something like that. It has Rob Lowe in it, so you know it's a good movie because he's so freaking hot. but anyway, it's about, like, an elephant orphanage and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that has been what I've been watching. I have not been a good horror movie fan lately. Well,
if you get a chance, The Invisible Man is great.
I will look that up tonight.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to go through
I want you to go first.
Okay. I decided to rank Nightmare on Elm Street, which is one of my favorite franchises. Mm-hmm. Starting off at the bottom of my list is Nightmare 6, Freddy's Dead. This movie's just bad. Like, it's really bad. The effects are shit. The script is shit. I don't care about any of the characters. The plot doesn't make sense. The ending negates what every other movie built up to. Like, it's just awful.
I really enjoy that, like, the sixth one is where they dropped the ball.
Yeah. Well, the ones leading up to it aren't great, but the sixth one is just really where they...
It's where they really dropped it. They yeah. kicked it away. It popped everything.
Yeah. So I've seen it a couple times, and I'm done watching it. Ugh. Nightmare 6, Freddy's Dead. That's my bottom tier. Number 8 for me is Nightmare on Elm Street, the 2009 remake. This had no point being remade. It was boring. I didn't care about any of the characters. The main characters, their acting is not good.
Harsh.
I feel like they didn't do that much that was new, and the new stuff they did do was really shitty. Like, the main change they made from the original was trying to make the audience question whether Freddy was really a pedophile or not, and then in the end they told you that he was, so I was kind of like, what's the point of making us question for 30 minutes if he is?
Yeah, like, we knew it at the beginning.
They use really crappy CGI effects, and I didn't think it was scary.
Okay.
So, I've only seen it once, and I'm good. That's my number 8, Nightmare on Elm Street 2009. Number 7, I have Nightmare 5, The Dream Child. I don't know. It's okay. The deaths aren't that great. None of the characters are that memorable. I don't really like the final girl from 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really annoying kid actor at the end of Dream 5.
I hate kids.
Yeah. It's not the worst one, obviously. Still not one I would reach for to rewatch.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Coming in at number 6, Nightmare 4, The Dream Master. This just, like, slightly edged out 5 because it had slightly better kills and more kills, which is good, I guess. The thing that irritated me the most about this movie is all the characters that had come back from Dream Warriors died within the first 15 minutes of this movie. And I was kind of like, what's the point of bringing them back if you're just going to kill them? I really liked those characters, and it pissed me off that they killed them off so fast.
Yeah.
But yeah, slightly better than 4, or slightly better than 5. It's okay. I'll rewatch it, but not
happily.
Yeah. Nightmare 5, number 5 is Nightmare 2, Freddy's Revenge. I really liked this one. I know a lot of people think it's super crappy. I thought it was cool. I thought it was kind of a unique twist having the main character be a boy rather than the typical final girl.
Mm-hmm.
It still had kind of some strong females in it, which was cool. I didn't care for the fact that they pulled Freddy into the real world. I thought that didn't make sense with the rest of the franchise.
Didn't they pull Freddy into the real world in the first movie?
Yeah, but in Nightmare 2, they pull him out and he's like a full scene. He's at a pool party killing people. And I just didn't care for it.
I mean, okay.
And it didn't have that many good kills. So that's what's holding it back. But it's still pretty good. Number 4, Freddy versus Jason.
Oh, it should be number 1.
I really like this movie. It's so funny. It's the right level of like cheese and camp. The characters are okay. There's a few of them that I like. A lot of them I didn't care that much about. There's a lot of kills, which is awesome. A lot of the effects are not great looking back at it, but I can get over it just because it's the type of movie where you turn it on and your brain turns off and you just have fun for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's what I appreciate about it. And it was cool seeing both Freddy and Jason in a movie together. And the last 30 minutes is epic, just watching Freddy and Jason beat the ever-loving shit out of each other.
It's definitely enjoyable.
Yeah. My number 3 is Wes Craven's New Nightmare. I really, really like this movie a lot. I thought it was so clever how meta they went. Wes Craven came back, which was awesome. That's exactly what they needed to do after 4, 5, and 6 happened. I can always tell he has like some of the best writing, the best dialogue. Heather Langenkamp came back. She's amazing in it. And I just really like this a lot.
I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. The only thing that held it back a little bit is there were only 2 kills in the movie. And I didn't really care for the effects at the end when she finally gets to Freddy. But other than that, it was a great movie. I'd give it like 8.7 out of 10.
Generous.
Number 2 might surprise you. My number 2 is the original Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay. I mean, I thought that one was really good. I'm kind of surprised it's number 2 and not number 1.
Yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street is amazing. It started off the franchise. It was legit scary. It had amazing kills. I liked the characters. And the story and dialogue was great. Like, besides maybe the very end with them driving off in the Freddy car and the fake mom being pulled through the window, I really have no complaints about this movie. It's great. It's just that I liked the next one a little bit more.
You went into so much more detail about yours than I did. I literally wrote like 1 line about them.
Oh, I just wrote down the movies. I'm just giving you my thoughts on it as they come up.
Okay.
All of this is my just ad lib. So then obviously my number 1 is Nightmare 3, Dream Warriors. This movie is so badass. Like, I can't even take it.
Is this the one in the mental hospital?
Yes.
I like this one.
It's the perfect setting. All the characters, except maybe like 1 or 2 kind of annoying ones, are awesome. Just the fact that the first kill of the movie, Freddy turns a character into a doll on strings. Like, that is genius. Probably
a marionette doll.
The best kill in the whole franchise. And Nancy comes back, and we get the arc of Nancy being back and teaching these kids. You get to see a bunch of cool dream abilities that these kids get. And in my opinion, this is honestly a perfect movie.
Yeah, I liked that one. I remember that one probably the clearest.
Yeah. So my list was last place, number 6, Freddy's Dead. Number 8, Nightmare on Elm Street, 2009 remake. 7 is Nightmare 5, The Dream Child. Number 6 is Nightmare 4, The Dream Master. 5 is Nightmare 2, Freddy's Revenge. Number 4, Freddy vs. Jason. Number 3, Wes Craven's New Nightmare. Number 2, Nightmare on Elm Street. And number 1, Nightmare 3, The Dream Warriors.
Beautiful. All right. So my list is going to be a lot shorter and less detailed.
Sorry, I got very, like, rambly because I am passionate about.
You are. And I am not nearly as passionate as you are compared to this. So let me get there. Starting out at the very bottom of the list, I don't even have a reason for this other than just, like, obviously this is the last one. Saw 3D.
That's a bad one.
Like, literally, I don't feel the need to explain why that's number, whatever number it is, 8. Yeah, that's number 8 on my list. Like, did not even finish, like, the movie sucked. Number 7 would be Saw 6, which is where we find out that Hoffman is the heir to the Jigsaw, like, fortune, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6 would be number 5. That's where Hoffman, like, officially goes dark.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a bad now. Number 4 is my 5th option, which is the autopsy.
The what?
It's where they do the autopsy on Kramer's body.
Mm-hmm.
And then number 4 would be Saw 3. It's where a doctor is trying to keep Jigsaw alive.
Yeah.
It was just boring, anticlimactic, didn't really do it for me.
I think 3 is actually my favorite of the ones
I've
seen.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're going to change your answer in a minute because you're forgetting one. Saw number 1 is number 3 on my list. That's the one where the doctor cuts off his foot. It was good, and it was like, because it was the first one, we didn't realize that these people were locked up because they had done things and, like, failed the test, essentially.
Yeah.
So it was nice to have that, like, curveball thrown at you. It was a good OG kind of thing.
Also, and the twist at the end of the first movie.
Yeah, the twist is good. Number 2 on my list was Saw 2, which is the torture house one. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but that one just did it for me. all I remember for that one, well, not all I remember all of it, but, like, one of the things that sticks out the hardest for me is that pit of hypodermic needles that they have to, like, crawl through. Like, Christ on a cracker, my friend.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's several other scenes in that one where they have to, like, stick their hands in, like, the razor blade boxes and stuff. But, like, those are just real scares. And it's also, I think this is also the one where they, like, troll through the tunnel and they find the doctor's body from the first movie in it.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Yeah. So, I don't know. I think they just did a really good follow-up. It was strong. You were still, like, having those scary moments and stuff. So, I support that one. But number 1 on my list, hands down, Jigsaw. No competition. It was Jigsaw. It was a freaking bop. Like, oh my gosh. We watched that together, didn't we?
Yeah, we did like that one.
Jigsaw was very strong, start to stop, was beautiful. They throw such hard curveballs at you. You don't even know who the bad guy is until, like, the last 2 minutes. And then you're like, fuck.
It was also very different, I feel like, from the other ones.
I agree. I think, honestly, the reason it was so different is because this was the last one to be made. So yeah. Jigsaw is already dead.
Mm-hmm.
Jigsaw's predecessor is not around. Like, he's kind of just doing his own thing. I gotta say, my favorite part about the entire Saw franchise is literally that the bad guy's name is John Kramer, which is Rachel's husband's name.
Yeah.
So I doubt he has ever seen Saw in his life.
I don't think he would enjoy it.
He would not. But I absolutely love and thrive off the fact that they have the same name.
Yeah. And pretty soon there's going to be another one to add to the list.
I just am not sure that they should make another one.
Well, it's made. It's just when they're going to release it.
I know, but I'm like, does the franchise really need that for it? Like, is that a good plan, bad plan? What are we doing?
The only thing I'm unsure of is, like, Chris Rock is very heavily involved in it.
I mean, okay, yes, but also you have to think of that one, Jordan Peele.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a comedian through and through, and he did great things with us.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you can't judge until you see it.
No, so, I mean, potentially he's breaking down the walls and is coming into the horror, or it's going to be an absolute shit show, one or the other.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, you ready to jump in?
I sure am. You want to go first?
Look at us being so polite. Yeah, I'll go first. I deserve this.
Okay.
So, reminder, last week we told you we were talking about national park disappearances. This is something near and dear to my heart because I am obsessed with national parks, state parks, anything like that. And I think these are so interesting. When we decided this topic, it instantly made me think the first time I went to the Rockies, we were doing like a quick hike. It was like 12 miles, but the sign on the ranger shack, literally they were just signs of different people who had disappeared in the park.
Yikes.
And I don't know why, but that was like the most eerie thing for me to see. Mm-hmm. And I was like, shit, like this actually happens, which obviously it does, but in my mind it didn't really like ever cross it. So we are going to talk about that. I chose a disappearance in the Smoky Mountains, which is kind of fun. I did this research a while back, and I did it in honor because Rachel's bachelorette party, she actually went to the Smokies. We stayed in a cabin there and we went hiking in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So this is for you, Rachel. Woo. I'm dedicating this episode to you. All right. So the Smoky Mountain National Park became a national park in 1983. It is 500,000. I'm doing this so wrong. I'm saying this. 522,419 acres.
Damn.
Which is only 816.28 square miles. So it's not huge, but it's not small.
It is beautiful, though.
It's absolutely stunning. If you have never been, 100% go. We were on the Tennessee-North Carolina line of the Appalachian Trail when we were there.
Yep.
So I'm going to lay the scene. It's Father's Day, 1969. Dennis Martin, a six-year-old resident of Knoxville, was visiting the park with his dad, grandpa, and older brother. It was a family tradition to go on a camping trip with the men on Father's Day.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah. They would hike from Cades Cove to Russell Field, which Cades Cove is somewhere that my family would go every single summer growing up. So it's kind of fun to throw in places, you know. They'd camp overnight, and then they would hike to Spence Field, which is near the Appalachian Trail. Dennis disappeared June 14th, 1969 at 4:30 while planning to surprise the adults with his brother and other kids also camping. He was last seen by his father going behind a bush to hide, intending to surprise the adults. After not seeing him for about 5 minutes, the dad was kind of like, huh, that's odd. He's just behind that bush, but like he hasn't come out yet. All the other children came out. And so the dad became concerned and started to look for him. He did not find him. He ran down the trail for 2 miles. Certain Dennis could not have gotten farther than that because, like, he's a six-year-old child, and this is a grown man. After several hours, they enlisted the help from the National Park Service rangers. The area he disappeared in has steep slopes and ravines. So everyone was like, okay, he could have gotten hurt. He could have fallen. There's copperhead snakes, bears, feral hogs, bobcats in the area. And shortly after his disappearance, a downpour broke out and they received about 3 inches of rain in a matter of hours.
That's a lot.
So basically anything that could have gone wrong and like hampered their search did.
I feel like that's how it always goes.
Yeah. Well, the rain that they received, it washed out trails and caused the streams around them to flood.
Aw.
And then the temperature at night dropped to nearly 50 degrees. So he's wet. It's now chilly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a little kid. He probably doesn't have that much body fat to, like, heat himself. So not a good. So the investigation. The search is performed by National Guard and Special Forces. They found absolutely no trace. Heavy rains and heavy mists hampered the search. Up to 1,400 people were involved with the search and potentially obscured possible clues.
Mm-hmm.
They had children looking for him as well within this group of searchers. So they found footsteps and they were like, hey, we think this might be him. But then they dismissed it as belonging to a Boy Scout participating in the search. Those footsteps led to a stream and then they disappeared. They showed that one foot was barefoot and one was wearing an Oxford, which was the type of shoe that Dennis was wearing, or a tennis shoe, which Oxfords are not tennis shoes, in my opinion. So, like, why was this kid hiking in Oxfords?
Yeah.
A retired park ranger, Dwight McCarter, thinks the prints were Dennis's because no one searching would have had one barefoot.
Yeah.
And yet everyone was like, nah, it was definitely someone of the search group. And it's kind of like, why would anybody have taken off one shoe? Like, literally, why? Give me one reason that is helpful.
There's no good reason.
No. And then later they found a shoe and a sock. And so I'm kind of like, if you found a shoe and a sock, there's a kid missing a shoe and a sock that's missing. Maybe those are his footsteps.
That would be logical.
Yeah. Well, they basically were just like, nah, it's not. So by June 22nd, so he went missing, I believe on the 14th is what I said.
Mm-hmm.
So we're literally already 8 days later.
Yeah.
56 square miles had been covered.
Dang.
More than 1,000 searchers continued to look until the 26th. And then on the 29th, the search was abandoned.
Mm.
It was officially closed September 14th, 1969, but no one was actively looking prior to that. As of 2020, it is still the largest search in the history of the Great Smoky Mountains. Dennis's father offered up to $5,000, which is equivalent to $34,859 in 2019 reward money.
Mm-hmm.
And this was literally not even that produced his body. It was for information.
Wow.
Yeah. So psychics, including, I'm going to say Jean Dixon, offered clues. Did not lead to anything.
Hmm.
A few years later, a ginseng hunter, which is a plant that can be used in medicinal purposes,
mm-hmm.
claimed to have discovered skeletal remains of a child, but was afraid to be prosecuted for illegal ginseng.
Oh.
So he kept it to himself. He eventually owned up to it, and a subsequent search turned up nothing. So, I mean, I don't know how much later he admitted to it. Like, something could have taken the bones.
He also could have kind of misremembered where he saw
it.
Yeah,
like, I don't want you to know where my ginseng is hidden. Yeah.
Or if it had just been a while, he might have not remembered where it was or something.
That's true. So, there are three main theories. Number one. He became lost and perished from exposure or some other cause during the first night. This is the theory that park officials kind of believe.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, he was attacked by a hungry bear or maybe a feral pig and carried off.
Yikes.
Which, again, probable.
Mm-hmm.
They have black bears there. Black bears are aggressive.
Yeah.
He was abducted and taken out of the park by someone or something. His father may have been involved on the afternoon. Tourist Harold Key and his family heard an enormous, sickening scream and shortly after witnessed a man covered in hair hiding and attempting to flee.
Don't care for that.
Right. So all the authorities determined the two were unlikely because they happened 5 miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically were like, hey, like, yeah, that's real sketch, but he would have had to have, like, run 5 minutes apart. 5 miles apart, and the sighting occurred a little after Dennis disappeared.
Yeah.
So the family also reported that the man had something thrown over his shoulder that was red, which Dennis was wearing a red shirt when he disappeared. Mm-hmm. So it is possible, potential, whatever you want to say, but I personally kind of think that he maybe fell down a ravine. I mean, when we were hiking there, they have some pretty steep drops.
Yeah.
And they're pretty rocky down, and there's a lot of trees. So, like, yeah, you guys are searching, and if you're a trained official, you probably know to look up in trees to find things. But if you have 1,400 people, like Boy Scouts and stuff, they're not going to necessarily naturally look up. We are a species that thinks we're the biggest predator. We don't look for things hiding above us.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know.
Which is stupid, because bobcats are in the trees. So are cougars, guys. If you don't want to get, like, attacked by an ambush predator, look up in the trees.
So what do you think it was?
I think he probably fell down one of the ravines or cliff drops and mm-hmm. got caught in a tree or something, and they just never found him because of that.
Yeah.
I mean, the bear is potential. The feral pigs are aggressive as well. I don't necessarily think his dad took him, because his family would have to account for, like, him being gone for a significant period. Mm-hmm. And I feel like somebody would have been like, where were you?
Yeah.
The fact that no family has come forward and been like, it was an unhealthy relationship kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Kind of leads me to believe that he really didn't have anything to do with it. And I don't think that Dennis knew that if a black bear attacks you, you're supposed to try to punch it in the face like a shark. So I can't imagine a 6-year-old actively punching a bear in the face.
Even if he did, I don't think it would be very effective.
Probably not. Did I tell you about that article I read?
What article?
The National Park Service released an article on what to do if you find yourself, like, basically being attacked by a bear, black bear versus grizzly.
Yeah.
And a grizzly bear, if they attack you, you're supposed to roll onto your stomach, cover your neck with the back of your hands, and put your backpack over your head kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because if you play dead, they're probably not going to kill you. They're just going to, like, get bored. Whereas a black bear will literally, like, bat you around and try to, like, kill you still.
Yikes.
And so black bears, you're supposed to try to fight.
I don't think I could fight a black bear.
I mean, it's definitely like a last resort option, but they're like, yeah, punch at its nose. And I'm like, I'm going to put my hand in a bear's mouth. You are right. I agree. I'm on board.
Yeah, I just don't know.
Yeah, so that was my story. Mm-hmm. The disappearance has never been solved. They never found a body.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So,
well, that has a lot of similarities with the story I chose.
Mm-hmm.
I chose the disappearance of Jared Negrete. He was born September 11th, 1978. And he was last seen in Yucaipa, California on July 19th, 1991. Jared was on a camping trip with his Boy Scout troop in San Bernardino County, California, and it was his first overnight backpack trip.
Not a good way to start.
No, it's sad. Jared was described as a shy boy and being slightly pudgy, but he was really excited for his camping trip and looking forward to it. The troop and the adult supervisor with them were hiking to the summit of Mount San Giorgione, which is 115,000 feet high. It is the highest peak in Southern California and the transverse ranges. And I guess the mountain is known as Old Grayback.
It's a beautiful name.
Yeah. When the group was 1,000 feet from the top of the mountain, Jared became tired and was instructed to remain behind alone while the rest of the group completed the hike.
No. Why would you do that?
Yeah, not a good idea.
A different time.
Yeah. The leader, an experienced hiker, said he would pick Jared up on the way down. After the hike was completed, the group returned and found that Jared had disappeared, and he has never been seen again after that.
Wow.
He was carrying a blue 2-quart canteen full of water at the time of his disappearances, The temperature was warm enough for him to survive unaided on the mountain for a few days, and there was a sufficient amount of water located in the area. So they originally thought if he was lost, he will be able to make it for a couple days until they could find him.
Oh, optimism.
Yeah. San Bernardino County Sheriff's deputies and search and rescue teams began searching a 130 square mile area of the wilderness. Within 3 days, their search was focused on a 6 square mile area where footprints believed to match one of Jared's high top tennis shoes were found.
Wait, he wore high tops? Was this bitch wearing Converse hiking?
I think so.
Oh my god, rookie mistakes.
Maybe that's why he couldn't make it to the top.
Yeah, he had no arch support.
Yeah. Well, this sounds like you. Searchers discovered beef jerky wrappers.
That is me.
Believed to be dropped by Jared.
Were they Slim Jims?
I don't know. Maybe.
I'm just saying it's an important distinction.
It was 1991. Were Slim Jims around in 1991?
I don't know, but if they weren't, he missed his time.
Okay. One of the things that I thought was really interesting on this case is they found a camera that was owned by Jared during their search. Mm-hmm. And the camera was still functional. They looked, and the camera was fully loaded with film. They found 12 pictures in total. Most of them were landscape scenes taken before he went missing. But the one that really got their attention, the last photo, is a close-up of Jared. And it's just his eyes and nose. And it was dark in the background, so they thought it might have been taken at night.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked like it's just a close-up of his face that just got snapped really quick.
Odd.
Family members said it appeared Jared pointed his camera at his face and snapped the pic. Which just makes me wonder what's going on that you took that picture. I don't know. It's just weird.
I'm not sure.
They think that maybe he could have lost the camera while sliding down the mountainside. At least 70 officers were deployed in the search. Many were airlifted by helicopter into the forest. There was also some on horseback. Over the next 2 weeks, as many as 3,000 people had logged 45,000 hours scouring the forest. There were some questions and theories. Did he fall off the trail and slide down the mountain? Was he abducted? But the question was, like, if he did kind of slip and fall, why was his body or some sort of remains not found? Like, did animals eat him?
Yeah.
In 2001, Jared's father, Felipe Negrete, became involved with the case of another hiker who got lost in the same area, a 16-year-old named William Parvin. Which is nice that he became involved, but that case doesn't have any answers either. The leading theory is that Jared died on the mountain and his body was scavenged by animals. But aside from the discovery of the camera, the pictures, and those few wrappers, there's been no other trace of Jared, and he remains missing 26 years after the fact. Or sorry, it's 29 now. 29 years.
It's so weird to me. Like, I can't believe they just left him.
Yeah. You would think there would be some consequences.
Yeah. I agree. I feel like that's crazy.
Yeah. So some vital statistics on Jared at the time of his disappearance. He has been missing since July 19th, 1991. He was missing from San Bernardino County, California. His classification is lost or injured missing. Date of birth, September 11th, 1978. He was 12 years old when he went missing. He was 5'2 and 150 pounds.
Oh.
He was a Hispanic male with black hair, brown eyes, and he had a small birthmark on his right cheek. He wore eyeglasses with brown plastic rims, and he was wearing a tan-colored t-shirt, which may have been Boy Scout style, green Boy Scout pants, and a pair of black high-top Pro Wings sneakers.
So, I'm just so confused.
About what?
Like, there's left this bitch.
Yeah.
We're like, yeah, you good, stay here.
Yeah.
And we're like, yeah, that's fine. That's not, like, you know, illegal. I mean, it might not have been illegal in the 80s, but whatever.
My thinking is, aren't there several leaders on a trip like this?
I would have thought so. I almost feel like they were like, well, I want to see the summit.
Yeah. The good thing to do would have, if there are multiple adults, have one adult stay with this kid and the other adult lead the rest of the group. I just couldn't believe that they had just left him.
No, that's absolutely bonkers.
Yeah. So that is all I had on Jared. It was kind of hard for me to find information.
Same.
And
I mean, it's an unsolved disappearance. It's going to be hard because I don't know what happened.
Yeah. So I started thinking and I was like, should I try to tackle another case? What should I do? I don't want to have too little information. So I kind of went down a rabbit hole.
As one does.
And I decided to research just the conspiracy theory of why so many people go missing in national parks.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
And it led me to this man named David Paulides. I think that's how you pronounce it. So he is a cryptozoologist, and he the one that kind of spearheaded the movement of getting people to acknowledge the fact that this is an issue and kind of spread information about the numbers of people that go missing in national parks.
Please tell me he said Bigfoot took him.
He is a Bigfoot hunter.
I mean, same.
He is a self-described law enforcement with an investigative background. And he released a series of books and a documentary called Missing 411, where he just explores this topic.
Okay, I changed my mind. I want his books for my birthday.
Okay.
You have a couple weeks to find them.
So he claims he kind of does a deep dive. He talks to different people in charge. One of the things I read is he recalls a conversation with a national park ranger. And this is all one long quote. I sat in my room at the lodge and listened to the ranger tell me about a series of missing people inside our national parks. The ranger stated that the events were very unusual. Many people were never found, and the Park Service was doing everything possible to keep a lid on the publicity surrounding the missing. He explained that non-law enforcement employees weren't privy to all the information, but that the upper echelon law enforcement supervisors inside the Park Service were concerned about the number and certain facts involving specific cases. And I found a connection between this story and one that you covered earlier, because David went on to appear on a show called Coast to Coast AM.
Oh my God, he was with Art Bell.
Yeah. So from this episode, I have a quote. We plunge once again into the deep end of the paranormal pool. Hundreds of people vanish from our national parks and forests under very unusual but very similar circumstances. So Paulides kind of has created this thesis, his words, that something sinister, even supernatural, is happening to missing persons inside of national parks. He calls these clusters. These alleged commonalities in time, place, and circumstance of North American disappearances are clues to a larger mystery. Some clusters, like people vanishing near water, are unremarkable. Water-related accidents are a common cause of death in the outdoors. Drowning has remained the number one cause of death in national parks over the last decade. But he claims that other clusters are just bizarre. He has described people melting into their clothing. He says that children...
Who has witnessed that?
I don't know.
I want names.
He says that children with disabilities are overrepresented amongst the vanished, and that storms inexplicably tend to hit after someone has gone missing. One thing that I think is the weirdest is Pollard's claim that people disappear and are found in the middle of berry bushes. They go missing while picking berries, and some are found while eating berries. The connection between disappearances and berries cannot be denied. It's in the berries.
It's literally like the berry bushes are fairy puddles. Or fairy pools.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought too. I was like, oh, this is kind of like Huldufolk.
I mean, honestly, it is the hidden people.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I don't know why that like just makes me want to chuckle.
I don't know. That was the weirdest part to me. He never explains what these clusters mean or what's causing so many people to vanish. An expansive story recently published in Outside puts the number at 1,600 individuals. And I guess this estimate is based on Pollard's research and includes missing persons on all public lands, which is approximately 640 million acres, or about 28% of land in the U.S. And I couldn't find if this was true or not. It sounds like it can't be true, but maybe it is. They say that the National Park Service doesn't keep track of missing persons. Is that true?
I don't know if that's 100% true. I think they probably do in some capacity, but also I feel like how many people do you say go missing in a national park and they never even got to the park?
Yeah. It says it doesn't have a completely accurate number of how many individuals have disappeared in the parks.
I mean, to be fair, like when I go visit the national parks, you're not like logging me in as having come into the park.
Yeah.
Like, I have a parks pass, so, like, I just drive through.
Yeah. After the attacks of September 11th, 2001, the agency put IMARS, which is its digital database for incident and criminal reports, into motion. It cost taxpayers $15 million and was meant to streamline crime reporting. But before this, records were kept in boxes and on paper. So if someone wanted to see a case on file, a records clerk would have to sift through all the records to find it. But on the other side of things, like, it's interesting to think about all these conspiracy theories, but it is deceptively easy to get lost outdoors. There's countless ways to become disoriented, hurt, and killed. Panicked humans do incomprehensible things like paradoxically undressing in freezing temperatures, a phenomenon that would explain why missing people sometimes remove their clothes. So there are a lot of interesting connections and similarities, but considering the large amount of space and the conditions, it's not completely like impossible to think of people just actually becoming lost and not being found.
Well, and another big issue is that for whatever reason people don't want to stay on trails.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of national parks literally just they have like social trails, but they have like actual trails made. And so when you go off trail, how are you going to find your way back if you don't know how to like tell directions and stuff, if you don't mark where you started?
Yeah.
Like, I have no cell reception in majority of the national parks I've been to. So unless you have, like, a compass and know how to read it, and you're really good at, like, directions, you're probably not going to find your way back.
Yeah.
And then you find the illegal pot farms.
Yeah.
And they kill you. But that was fun.
Yeah. It does kind of freak me out, the idea of just someone going missing and no trace of them ever being found.
Yeah, it's definitely not a comforting thought, but also I feel like you're smart enough not to go off-roading.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I'm not, but.
Yeah.
You know.
Weird phenomenon, and it was interesting to research.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoy this one. I'm really excited for next week's episode because I have a wild tale. Like, just all over the freaking board.
Yeah. You want to tell everyone what we're doing next week?
What is our legit topic? Is it mysterious deaths?
Oh, God, I don't remember.
I think it's mysterious deaths, but the person that I chose, like, you watch him in movies or TV shows, and you do not think that he is this big of a freak, but he is a freak.
I think next week is our cold cases episode.
Oh. Oh, because technically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the week after, guys, buckle your britches. It's going to be a ride.
I get into some conspiracy theory territory in mine.
I am very excited for that. I love a good conspiracy theory.
It's also involving one of your favorite people in the whole world.
Who's my favorite person?
Aleister Crowley.
Oh, he really is. If you have not, like, had this very, very clear to you, I have a deep, deep love for cults.
Mm-hmm.
So, just give me anything cult-related and I'm instantly on board.
Yeah. So that will be fun to cover.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Cool. I'm going to go eat my cold pizza now. Okay.
I may work up some energy and watch a horror movie.
I mean, I'm definitely going to put something on my television while I eat my cold pizza, but I'm not really sure what I'm feeling. I have a list of movie homework from my mom. She really wants me to watch Emily in Paris.
Oh, there are.
Did you watch
that?
No,
there are a lot of things on my list to watch before that.
It's got Lily Collins in it, which I kind of love her, mm-hmm. So I'm on board for it. But it's just not necessarily something I would normally watch.
Yeah. Well, report back. See how it goes.
Will do, will do. Have a great week.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Hope you listen next week. I'm Rachel.
I'm Mikhail.
Bye.